Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
One of the top stories, the debut of China's first yuan-denominated crude futures in the last week or so. The hype around this has been building, I think you might agree, for the last couple of years. I mean, this idea of a threat to the petrodollar, which has essentially remained intact since World War II. Officials there claim that this is just an attempt to circumvent issues that they see in the world. Do you view this as an actual threat to national sovereignty, or at least to U.S. dollar hegemony?
It's clearly a major to the U.S. dollar, and I think it's one of many things that are unfolding. We continue to see not only China, but Russia and others to move away from the dollar as the choice currency. We also continue to see, particularly Russia and China, continue to greatly build up their gold reserves. Many feel it will eventually move to a point where it will be some sort of new semi-backed or fully backed gold, a new world currency, again, to move away from the dollar. In fact, the trade war stuff that's going on, I think, is only going to accelerate that move and want China to make maybe even happen faster than it was originally targeted. So, yes, I think while not big news to the don't worry, be happy crowd, that certainly was an important peg in an overall changing wheel of international currencies. And so I think it is something that we need to look out long term and expect to see more things like that come out of China, Asia, Russia, and some other areas of the world.
Especially in the BRIC nations, we have to have crude oil imports. China is arguably the second largest. They're our number one trade partner, but they're having difficulty transacting in crude oil, and it essentially just gives, I guess, a vehicle. For instance, let's say there's a country that's receiving huge sanctions. They can finance their oil imports and whatnot. So how do you think this might impact the precious metals markets? Do you see a correlation there at all?
Two countries which at the moment the United States seem to have the most heightened tension with, keep big countries, Russia and China, continue to greatly build up their gold holdings. And I just ask everybody, why are they doing it? Are we smarter than them, meaning here in America, that we find most Americans still totally void of any gold holdings? I think it's obviously the reverse. I also think that part of the oil trade is to avoid having to take on more U.S. dollars. A lot of it comes from the hard asset crowd, but there seems to be more and more of a voice coming from the large institutional investors around the world that the United States has a lot of problems, and one of it is its currencies. And that's why when people expected the dollar to be rip-roaring to the upside here these last 6 to 12 months, in fact, it's been flat to down, has made those people, you know, even more so concerned that there are a lot of issues. Is it down to the local retail financial guy or gal and the local person? No, they're still caught up in the happy tales that are told, you know, by the talking heads on major financial networks. But people that know and understand what big money is doing sees this as a continuing move away from the United States as, you know, the number one economic power and its currency, eventually not the world's resource currency.
I think you make some great points there. And Peter Schiff, as well as Dr. Stephen Lieb, have sort of echoed your sentiments. And we're patriots here. We care very deeply about the concepts that were put in place, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the original founders' ideas. What we are upset about is the way that this has become, at least apparently, corrupted. And so I need to throw that proviso in there before I say that what I believe you have outlined here very well. In the West, we have embraced this concept of debt, have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. I remember we started the show over 12 years ago, and we hoped that we could spread the message of sound money, a monetary system on which you could really build or rebuild a nation. What we're doing here in the West is doubling down on debt. But China and Russia, as you noted, we have incredible tensions against, are building up massive stockpiles of gold. And now silver, of course, in Moscow, building up huge silver supplies. This is a new trend, by the way, in central banks. Appear to be following the successful playbook that was in place well over 100 years ago, especially at the turn of the last century. If you work hard, you have a huge savings rate of at least 15 to 20, 25%, and you build a future for your family and for your nation. Unfortunately, as many of my guests I mentioned have said here in the past, we've fallen into this trap that almost every, you know, reserve currency nation embraces. Eventually that implodes, that whole concept. Can you tell us how that might happen here?
Well, one of the things I don't think is being discussed here at the moment as the trade talk wars heats up and has gripped the markets these last, you know, few weeks. And that is, yeah, sure, China doesn't do everything legit. I don't think the United States does either trading. But what we don't speak about here in America is that a lot of what we are importing from them that's causing the great imbalances are a lot of things we don't actually need to day-to-day life. They're excesses. They're things that we're willing to go, as you noted, into serious debt in order to have. America doesn't want to look at itself for that, and yet the evidence is what I've argued as about as long as you've been on, that you're continuing to see America go down the wrong path by just seeing how many new public storage facilities are opening up. 1 in 11 people now in America have something stored at a storage facility. And yes, some of those people are using it for work or in between moving and all, but a lot of it is just too much stuff. A lot of that stuff has been bought on borrowed money. The United States has lived, you know, in my career, you know, I entered the brokerage business way back in 84. We're the world's largest creditor nation. Now we're basically, you know, done a 180. All these things and may not impact us today or tomorrow, but it's a tipping point, and there's just more and more weight is putting on the other side of the scale. And it's kind of like that when we were kids on that seesaw, when finally enough weight or some extra on the back of the seesaw jumps on and you just shoot straight up. And then that's where I think the United States has gotten itself into. So the debt issue is a big problem. And in my work, which is mostly planning and estate planning and retirement planning, most people don't want to hear about less is more. Most people don't want to hear about, you know, lowering two or three levels their spending in order to come comparable to their income. And that's how the United States has been going. For every dollar we take in, we create two or three more dollars of debt and debt binge that's getting to the point where I think you could argue not only will we not be able to eventually pay back all this debt, but any significant rise in rates and or a continuing increase to the debt level, we're going to have trouble starting just to service the interest payments. So there's a lot of bad things out there. You know, you just touched on a couple of them right now.
Firstly, we're already struggling servicing debt levels, $21 trillion. I remember there was a time in the past when we were actually turning back the debt dial, but it seems like that was in the late 1990s. Everyone was excited by that event. Now we're accelerating by over $1 trillion a year. So it is an enormous unpayable sum. Now, you, having been in this industry so long, probably familiar with, considered one of the best money managers out there. His best-selling book actually is out of print and sells regularly for thousands of dollars online. We give a free digital copy away to our subscribers and friends of the show. Seth Klarman told people to raise cash levels in the year 2000. Again, in 2007, he was ridiculed. Again, in 2007, and in fact, his business, money management business, suffered terribly during these periods simply because people couldn't fathom why in the world would anyone do that, and he ended up outperforming virtually everyone else and the markets for years. Well, he's raised cash levels again, as you might expect.
I, for one, I no longer manage money, but I still give my observations to our clientele, and I began at the beginning of the year stating that whatever your holdings were in 2017, minimally should be 50% less than general equities and as much as 90% if you're particularly going to need that principal in the next few years, because I expected a, you know, substantial end to this, you know, euphoria that ran through the financial markets for several years. And there was a danger that if things get out of hand, that there could be substantial losses as well and fairly quick. So I concur. I'm glad to be proven wrong, but I don't see any reason to expect any substantial rise in general equities. In fact, the things we're just discussing now here, just starting the second quarter of 2018, already are accelerating the longer list of things that are problems that finally at least some are listening to. You know, just earlier this week, Chris, you know, we tested some of the most key moving averages that just a at the beginning of the year, no one suspected we would even come close to. And it was logical to bounce off them because usually long-term moving averages are not broken, at least for once or twice or sometimes three or four times they're tested. I think the other thing that you know, that in this past week, the most recently as we speak today, the retraction of the so-called greater growth that everybody thought we had on the employment side just 2 months ago. I mean, a 50,000 negative adjustment and then a very low, you know, 100,000 and, you know, and change increase. I think the employment game run-up is over too. So everywhere you look, it's hard. And if I wanted to be bullish to make a justification for it, other than take what I've always coined the don't worry, happy attitude, and that is, at, you know, if they throw you off the top of the Empire State Building all the way down, you say the same thing, hey, so far, so good. I just don't see anything logical to support substantially higher general equity prices anytime in the near or intermediate future.
Moving on to the precious metal sector, clearly gold is very well positioned, at least from a technical vantage point, the best for substantial gains. Top pundits looking for 1,400. We want to clear that level before moving on to retest the 2011 bull market highs. Do you take the view that we're looking at a continuation of the year 2000-2001 of the original gold bull market, or will this be a new bull market, and what do you think that will portend for precious metals aficionados?
You know, hindsight always is 2020, and we'll be able to state that if and when those of us who think it's gone substantially higher are right, and then we can point, we'll see, it actually began there. What I do concur a lot with what you just said is that technical aspects of gold, I think, are really impressive. You know, it was, I think, around December of the 2016, you can correct me, but I think we bottomed somewhere around 1120, 1125. And then basically throughout 2017, we just started to make higher lows. First, I think we went down to test 1200. Then the 1250 area became, you know, we didn't get break below that. And now we've spent the last few months where we didn't break 1300. All the while, each time we rallied back to that 1350, 1375 area. To me, that's just a spring getting ready. And I can actually talk about a chart even I used a few weeks ago on my blog to show that there's really been a phenomenal 4 year base building period for gold. And it's true, you know, when 1375 and then 1400 get taken out, I think gold runs up several hundred dollars, and believe it or not, the longer we trade in this space and then do that, the better the run-up will be. I think that there are a lot of fundamental reasons to own it, and then when you combine it with technical pictures that look as they do, I'm very, very comfortable, and I don't represent it. I have my fifth year now of not, have no involvements with mining companies. I only own two stocks myself. The rest is in gold and cash. Quite frankly, I'm just truly a third-party observer in this. You know, someone took the people I love and people I care for and said, pick the one investment that's a major investment that you can look out 1 to 3 to 5 years from now and it'll just be higher than the others. It'll be gold, and it's not ever going to be on the mainstream radar. It's, in fact, it's always going to be laughed at and scoffed at because it's, you know, it's not going to do real well if financial assets are doing real well. And the fact that it even hung in during the last couple of years when the stock market really got just overheated and didn't collapse despite everybody predicting the relic was, you know, about to collapse again, is just another indication to me that the next few years are going to be very good.
Let's talk about gold's shiny cousin, AG Silver. Most conductive, most reflective, most useful, and at a price of 80 to 1 in the gold to silver ratio, easiest to procure precious metal. This is obviously dislocation, a disequilibrium, if you will, as economists like to call it. The pendulum there is obviously relative to gold swung way beyond an extreme, and perhaps that pendulum could swing back. What that might mean for silver price?
I probably would have to say that I'm not as bullish, but that's just because I'm bullish on gold. And I've always believed that silver did its best once it was pronounced to the world that gold was in a bull market. Then the public and the smaller institutional types get heavily involved in it, and then they take, like you said, it's the cheaper cousin, and it's, you know, people always choose quantity over quality. They rather own 1,000 shares of a dollar stock than 100 shares of a $10 stock. And so I think it needs to have gold break out and be on the front pages again of the financial world, and I think that'll happen when we get above 1,400. I think it has a little bit weaker of a technical picture at the moment, but it's probably closer to a major move than gold because we continue to have lower highs and higher lows in silver, so that trading range is shrinking, and it gets to a point where it either makes then a big move to the upside or downside. And since, because I think gold is going to go higher, I just don't see any way how gold goes higher and silver collapses and vice versa. So I think it will trail gold until gold becomes, you know, in vogue again, so to speak, in the general public, and then I think silver takes over and then it outperforms gold.
I have a slightly different take on it. The president of India, in imposing what I believe to be draconian policies again on his people, you might remember several months ago, I guess it was last year, he simply outlawed some of the lowest currencies, which threw the entire economy into chaos, forcing people in electronic transactions. And then you might say at the opposite extreme, they just announced that they're outlawing all cryptocurrency wallets, Bitcoin and related currencies. Now, being a fan of Bitcoin, I don't advocate any of this, but what I think is interesting is that it might be setting the stage for a massive gold and silver demand increase, and perhaps might even be the onset or the genesis of the new bull market push, because as we know, Indians have a huge propensity, a huge demand for precious metals, just slightly behind China, many, many thousand year tradition. And now, unfortunately, gold is probably beyond the means of the typical Indian household. And so silver at an 80-to-1 differential presents great opportunities. So again, this is just speculation, and I'm in no way disparaging your comments. But if I were to ask what might help close the jaws, if you will, between that huge 80-to-1 gold to silver ratio, any other markets or any other commentary you'd like to throw in here as we wrap up?
I've taken, you know, an extremely bearish stance personally for those people that still listen, you know, to our blogs and our clients. You know, basically our work is limited to retirement planning and estate planning. I just think, you know, we talked earlier, and I meant to get this point out, and I'll use it as part of the closing. We talked, and you brought up clearly the $21 trillion in actual debt. But what Americans don't take into account is our unfunded liabilities. You know, you and I as a business, if we have employees and we owe them money for the future for pension, we have to put money aside. And if we don't, we're cooking the books. America has much more than $21 trillion in unfunded liabilities. There's estimates it could be as high as $100 trillion. And now everybody seems to think that, well, if, you know, if somebody has too much debt, they should just be forgiven. I mean, there's even talk now of, you know, writing off student debt loans, you know, which mostly the government holds, and just say, oh, it's too bad these poor kids took on this debt, so let's just, you know, let's not make them have it anymore. You know, that goes to that video that went around a few years ago, and I still use it from time to time, and I always forget the name of the professor. It was during the last election, and he talked about that, you know, America, more and more people getting in the wagon and don't want to pull it anymore. They want somebody else to pull it for them. And it gets to the point where if you don't have enough pullers and you're keep punishing those that are left pulling, you know, who's left to pull? That's, I think, another huge issue that we have here. So my philosophy is very simple, Chris. Less is more. Most Americans need to come down a couple, two, three levels of lifestyle or spending, especially those that have little saved and owe so much. Until we're closing, and I have nothing against the industry, I don't think they're dishonest or anything, but until we're closing public storage facilities versus opening them, I think we're going to continue to have the problems that we continue to speak about.
But I think sometimes success can be a hurdle to really understanding the plight of the working and middle classes. And that, of course, historically was the backbone of the American success story. And so I really appreciate, and I hope listeners try to wrap their minds around your comments. This, I think, will be the only way that the typical household can manage what we see coming. The debt levels are enormous. Credit card debt over $1 trillion. Shocking article this week noting that subprime is now a huge problem.
It's the only thing that kept auto sales going. You know, just real quick, I hated to interrupt you, but you brought up a very good point. It was unheard of 20 years ago that anything passed a four-year loan. Now 5 to 7 year car loans are very common. And one of the reasons is the only way you could get somebody into a new car. And then, of course, once they struggled with that, they had to start coming, you know, with cheap paper again. And everybody goes, well, it's not like a house because they'll just have to give the car back. Well, that's great, but then you have all those cars out there that are used and need to be going somewhere, so people aren't about to run out and buy new cars. So the first place that's going to get hit even before the housing sector is the auto industry, thanks to, you know, what's happened with subprime. It is a very good point to note.
The only other thing I'd just add is that this is going to hit all levels of society, from the affluent all the way down to those under the poverty level. Again, just think of us as financial meteorologists. We don't always hit it on the head. It might be a coin flip, but every now and then there is that rogue wave, that hurricane, that typhoon. And we see storm clouds on the horizon, I think, is the takeaway. All right, Peter Granditch, please tell us more about what we will find when we bookmark petergranditch.com.
Sure. Like I said, the bulk of our business is handling retirement business and estate planning. PeterGranditch.com. I did go back, not all the way, and not going to go back to all the way I once was, but I did bring back a new blog called Granditch on Markets. I do spend more time talking about the markets, but not as an advisory service, and certainly not anybody that thinks they're going to be able to correctly keep forecasting which way the markets go. And all of that's free at PeterGranditch.com. That one's called Granditch on Markets, and the other blog is Pete Speaks, and that's everything other than talking about markets that I note there on that blog. Thank you, Chris.